You're listening to DraftKings Network.
On April 26th, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. Only in theaters April 26th. Rated R.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
Chris, fantastic reading.
I screwed up on a crude. Out.
Oh my God, are you going to be okay?
I wasn't pleased with myself.
You said kudos wrong too.
No, it's kudos.
What?
It's how they say it in England. It's how they say it in England.
We're in America, Jack. What are you talking about?
It's their language.
Kudos?
It's kudos.
Kudos. Yeah, that's how they say it.
Roy, can you end every sentence kudos like that?
You're an American Jack.
That was an American Jack.
That was a Coming to America reference.
That needs to be a shirt. You're an American Jack. Unfortunately, Roy, I'm afraid of the people who will buy that. They will not be your people.
No, they will not. They will not be.
There's a bunch of selfies taken in their own sport utility vehicle liking that tweet.
I'm really upset that we talked about F1 for like 0.5 seconds and I didn't get what a word in about the
I was trying to set the table for you there, Smitty. Well,
but you were going on and on about Jerry Jones's yacht and your boating excursion. Yeah. I didn't want to step on your toes.
I tied it back to they're going to put a moat at Hard Rock Stadium. So we do need to get to your F1 passion at some point. You want to get into one of these paddock parties, no?
I want to drive the safety car during the Miami Grand Prix. I want them to let me drive the safety car when there is a wreck so I can lead the pack in my little Mercedes safety car. How fun would that be?
And this is all because your fandom, it originated with a Netflix show that everyone can't stop talking about.
Yes. Okay. It is the Drive to Survive Netflix show. They have access to all of the drivers, all of the teams, all the directors, Toto, Lewis, Christian, Max Verstappen, Baby Lando. They're all on it. They're amazing. Daniel Ricciardo, love him. There's just so many personalities in the sport. No one ever told me that F1 was only, you know, 50% cars and mechanics, but also 50% personality. There is just a lot going on there and I love it.
How time consuming are the races? Because the average sports fan listens to this and tries to figure out if they actually have time for F1.
Not at all. So yesterday was the Spanish Grand Prix. There wasn't really any
Grand Prix.
Grand Prix. Excuse me.
Crying out loud.
Whittingham.
Oh, he's right.
Yesterday, the Spanish Grand Prix was only about 2 hours long. Unless there's like a big crash or something, most of the races are pretty self-contained. So you have qualifying quals on Saturday. That's like 2 hours, 2.5 hours long on ESPN. And then Sundays you have the race. Those are pretty, like, they're pretty short, like start to finish. I think it started at 9. I was done watching around like 11:30. It's better than baseball in terms of time commitment. And there's only 23 races in a season. So it's not that big of a time commitment.
Do they show the party culture on this Netflix show? Because that's what got me. I want to be in one of these paddocks.
Very, very quickly, Mike, before you carry on, I just want to take a moment to appreciate your commitment to allowing Jessica to talk about this, because the rest of the Zoom has nothing for her. And you are trying your best to carry on this conversation. I want to watch this Netflix show, but I feel so bad that Jessica has this sporting passion that none of us could give a shit about.
Fashion.
I mean, you guys just don't appreciate what I'm here for. I think I was hired because of my F1 knowledge. If I mean, Mike, you could correct me, but
things really started breaking your way when you became a public fan, no doubt.
Exactly. And also the Miami Grand Prix was announced the day before my hire at the Dan Le Batard show. Coincidence? I think not. I am moving to Miami for this Grand Prix and I will be driving the safety car. You better watch
Witty,
out.
Witty, you would call out my interest in her because far too often you and I have been that excited Grand Prix voice that has been awake at 9 a.m.
No, but,
to
but
watch
Mike,
a two-hour sporting event.
How many Formula One races have you watched? I'm not calling you up, by the way. I'm genuinely appreciative.
I've watched more than you,
Jack. I'll be a good teammate.
I've watched more than you, Jack. I've been out there in the UK. I've talked F1 with a bunch of English people. And I've sat in a William Hill sports book and been like, huh, I see the appeal. They don't just turn left. Who's this Lewis Hamilton? He is dashing.
The only name you know?
Is that a pussycat doll he is dating? I've been on it. And then there was this tremendous movie starring Sylvester Stallone called Drive, in which he, and I believe it was Sunshine from Remember the Titans, Kip Purdue, were bitter rivals. And there was Bo Brandenburg, who is this German lad who also was in Inglourious Basterds. And that movie kicked ass. No one has seen Drive? No one has seen Drive.
Mike, that doesn't answer my question. How many Formula One races have you watched?
I've watched one.
He got Lewis Hamilton into the weekend obs today. Yeah. I feel like that was a big first step. My ears perked up when I heard Lewis Hamilton. You actually got the expression wrong, though. The meme or the thing that all the F1 racers or fans say is death taxes Ham Verbot, because it's Hamilton, Verstappen, Bottas who are always the top three, because you got the Mercedes car, the Red Bull car. Max Verstappen has had a hell of a season so far, but he cannot catch up to Lewis Hamilton yet. And then you have the second Mercedes car, which is Valtteri Bottas, who is a great driver and drives a great car, but gets none of the credit because he is on a team with Lewis Hamilton, who is the best F1 racer of all time.
Whoa. Michael Schumacher would like a word. And if there is a documentary that needs to be made, it's on Michael Schumacher and his tragic story.
Mike, get the hell out of here.
Are you familiar
with it? Why would you make a doc on Michael Schumacher?
He just came out of his coma.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Make a doc.
Yeah, and he's like, there's all sorts of like controversy surrounding what treatments he's receiving. He was a Lewis Hamilton of his time. Everyone knew Michael Schumacher, right?
Okay,
right.
Well, Lewis Hamilton is the Lewis Hamilton of our time, and the time is right now, so I don't really care about the past. I'm interested in the present, and Lewis Hamilton is unequivocally the best athlete in the world. You can compare him to anyone you want, Messi, Ronaldo, I don't care. He is the best.
Serena Williams would like a word, and I don't think we have to be flippant and stand on the shoulders of Michael Schumacher and take his accomplishments out.
I'm just saying, Lewis Hamilton is the face of the
that
future.
That seems kind of brutal considering the present state of one Michael Schumacher.
I'm not taking anything away from Michael Schumacher. I am just saying Lewis Hamilton right now is the GOAT.
Who's not mentioned as a GOAT, by the way? Trout, just saying.
The name of that Sylvester Stallone movie was Driven.
Shit.
Lewis Hamilton has more personality in a pinky fingernail than Mike Trout does in his entire body.
You could make the argument that Lewis Hamilton is better at his sport than anyone else is at theirs. You could make that argument. I mean, he wins every week. He wins every
successfully.
Week.
Successfully. Yeah. But people want to take the credit away from him and say that, oh, Mercedes has the best car. They have the best engineers. Whatever, like most of it's just the car. That's not true, because why then is Valtteri Bottas not as successful as Lewis Hamilton?
And exactly,
you know, why is he able to outmaneuver Max Verstappen every week so far this year? I mean, Verstappen's had one win, but he's driving a great car too. Red Bull's has to get some credit there. So I don't know. That's all I'm saying.
Good point.
Lewis Hamilton, Pfizer. My grandpa died.
Driven also got 14% on Rotten Tomatoes, so it wasn't that good.
I'm telling you. Watch that, because it's a really good movie.
I don't want to watch it.
Driven?
Even for me, Mike, Stallone.
So he's a cagey driver that's being pushed by the young upstart on his own team. And everyone is trying to figure out if he's got one home run left in that bat of his. I mean, I think you can find a lot of connection points here.
You're right.
As Sugats is coming for your territory.
I stand corrected.
The documentary on F1, you guys have seen Senna? No? Has anyone here seen that? It's very strong, spiritually strong. Jessica, you can't talk that rat-a-tat-tat about
not yet.
Are you kidding me?
Dan, not yet. Oh, give me a chance, okay? I just started a new job. I'm moving across the country. My grandpa died. I got a lot going on right now. I'll watch the documentary.
The movie's been out for like four years. years.
But you get irrationally angry when people don't watch doc. Like, I didn't watch the Tiger one yet, and you got mad at me for it.
Well, it's because like, you care about something. You allege to care about something, and you're not that busy, Stugatz.
Right, you're, right.
You're too busy.
You're right.
Too busy to watch stuff that you care
about.
Is that
the thing to say when you're supposed to watch something?
She talked rat-a-tat-tat like if she was still hyped up on last week's Cafecito about F1. And that is, it's an award-winning documentary about the sport that she loves. I would have assumed that she would have watched that.
I just became a fan of the sport in April 2021, Dan. So I have a lot of catching up to do. I will watch Senna. I will watch Rush. I heard that's a great, I think it's an F1 documentary. I'm not sure. There's a lot of good stuff out there regarding F1. I'm still trying to play catch up here. And, you know, call me a Fairweather fan or a new fan, whatever. It's true. But I love the sport. I love it to the core, to the bottom of my cold heart. I am an F1 fan. New F1 fan or not, I love it.
You have talked more F1 here than I believe in the entire 20 years we've been doing this show combined that we have ever talked F1. So I'm happy to be a petri dish to support your enthusiasm.
I put that same observation in Weekend Observations probably 20 times, and that's the extent of the F1 discussion we've had.
98 times. He's won 98 times, Stugatz. You've done it 98 times then. Lewis Hamilton.
One of the things that made an appearance, I don't know if this happened with you, Stugatz, whether you get these alerts or not, but it is a jarring alert to get on your telephone at any point in your life, I would imagine. 10-story, 23-ton piece of Chinese rocket going to crash into the earth, and no one knows where it is going to crash. I didn't have any information on this story before it arrived on my phone and was like, wait a minute. A lot of you had this same reaction because this became something that people were paying attention. It eventually crashed into the Indian Ocean. And we got lucky. Yes, everyone
dodged a bullet.
Everyone did get lucky there. And the Chinese say that Americans were overinflating as part of our hostilities toward China because we are jealous of their space program and the advancements being made in their space program. And evidently, they would claim that they had a working idea of where that would land. But I don't think we're overreacting to say a 10-story, 23-ton anything falling from space and we don't know where it's going to fall. Evidently, the Chinese are claiming they knew it was going to disintegrate some.
You got to give me something. Like, I'm concerned. I need to get prepared in the event that it falls on my house. Like, you got to give me, or near my house, you got to give me something that other than we have no earthly idea where this thing is going to fall.
A likely spin from the Chinese. And let me tell you something, China. This is America, Jack. I'm not looking up to see if a NASA satellite's going to be hitting me in the dome. All right? I was petrified looking at mobile alerts, and no one had it in the Indian Ocean. I was looking at the graph, so it was really unsettling that it landed outside of the radius that I was supposed to be paying attention to. I wish there was someone out there saying Indian Ocean, because I wouldn't have been gripped by fear my entire weekend.
You would have liked betting odds on this.
Yes.
Right? Where is
this going to
land?
I mean, I like my chances. I like my chances. It would have been really terrible luck if it landed in Kendall, Florida. That would have just been like, what are the odds? This has never happened.
Do you need to know more about space in a way that you're comfortable with the idea of something 10 stories and 23 tons falling from the sky and us not knowing where it's going to land?
I just need to know where it's going to land. I don't need to know more about space. I don't care about space.
That's really troubling to me because I'm a child of the 90s, and I saw at least three action movies in which we blew away an asteroid, but now we can't do anything about a one wayward piece of space equipment. It was very troubling. Can you imagine if that landed somewhere?
I do. It did land somewhere.
But
in
the ocean. You know, right. Yeah. All it did was, a bunch of fishies.
I just love the idea of all of us had the same idea, I imagine, knowing very little. Some of you in the audience may know a great deal about space exploration and remedies to these kinds of problems. But I'm assuming that all of us sort of said to ourselves, hey, can't we just send something up there to blow it up? Like, can't we
right?
just...
A ragtag team of drillers led by Bruce Willis? Is there nothing we can do?
What are you shaking your head no about, Jessica? You didn't have the thought, why don't we just blow it up with something?
No, I was watching a local news story in Pittsburgh, PA this weekend about this rocket falling to Earth. And there was some government official from the United States saying that we have not yet considered shooting it down out of the sky. And I was like, what Family Guy episode did I just turn on where we're actually talking about shooting something out of the sky with like a missile? Like what's going on right now? That is the absolute stupidest idea that I've ever heard.
Let it burn up in the sky. I saw that quote and I was immediately bothered because I was like, well, why the not? Let's blow this thing up. That's what we do. This is America, Jack.
Billy, I can't imagine you as someone who creates all manner of irrational fears. I can't imagine that you received an alert on your phone that some 10-story, 23-ton piece of Chinese rocket debris was going to end up hitting somewhere unknown and that that wouldn't fill you with fear.
Billy has a panic room.
Yeah. I mean, I was surprisingly cool about this one because I kind of figured out, what am I going to be able to do about that, right? Like, I'm not going to catch it. I'm not going to shoot it out of the sky. Like, if it falls, it falls. And if it hits me, I'll know when I'm dead. What am I going to do about this? I can't do anything about this.
That's a surprising place for you to find Zen.
Didn't hit me.
Tranquility.
Really think about it. It is mighty unsettling that we know so little about what's above our head and what's below. It's been said that we know more about space than the oceans. Well, why? The ocean's right there. It's not that hard to get to it. We need to get on that. I was just sent a picture from my uncle-in-law's home that we vacation in. We swim off a canal. There is a saltwater crocodile in this photo that is at least 11 feet long. I am good luck getting me to go in that water ever again. And it's so murky. You can't see. It's terrifying. Dan, the notion that you can just go into a body of water and have literal no idea what's below you, and we've just normalized going into it, it's terrifying. It's terrifying.
That we've normalized swimming?
Just swimming in the ocean. Yeah.
I'm telling you, there needs to be a stigma. No idea what's in there. You need to be able to go into this with a suit, not unlike going into outer space. It's terrifying what lies beneath.
Mike, there was this little thing called the Cold War in which all of the governments around the world decided it was much sexier to send man into space and land on the moon than to discover wherever the giant squid lives in the Pacific Ocean. So I think that's your answer. I think like we just decided, you know, if man can walk on the moon, we're the best country in the world and no one really gives a shit about what's down there.
I think Whittingham asked a very interesting question here in the chat. Is uncle-in-law a thing?
I've never heard that before.
It sounds like you want to use a Keys house. That's right. What it sounds like to me.
Yeah, I don't want my wife's uncles.
Like, what am I supposed to call my wife's uncle? Just my wife's uncle then?
Probably. I think so. I think, first off, the word cousin does way too much work as a means of familial designation. It can mean like a 3-year-old or a 90-year-old. Not nearly enough specificity in cousin. But second, like that's just kind of an area of ambiguity. Like what do you call an uncle-in-law? I mean, I guess, if mother-in-law exists, why couldn't uncle-in-law exist? But I don't know, actually.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo, please. Does the word cousin do way too much work in terms of familial designations?
Whether you hydrate to live or live to hydrate, Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. With 3 times the electrolytes of the lead in sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness, all in a single sugar-free stick. Are you heading to the airport on a long flight? Or do you need something after your flag football game? Well, if I was you, I would definitely go with Liquid IV just for the electrolytes so you don't feel run down. And I know for me, Liquid IV helps me start my day in the morning, and it helps give me the energy to do stuff like cut my yard and wash my car and work out and just face the day. And you can get your energy back while drinking something that's delicious. And when I say delicious, you can pick from flavors like pear, white peach, green grape, lemon lime, and more. Liquid IV is non-GMO, free from gluten, dairy, and soy. However you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco, or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code DAN at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration using code DAN today at liquidiv.com.
We always enjoy talking to the Vanilla Volcano, Joe Thomas. He's a Hall of Famer. I don't know where the origins of Vanilla Volcano come from. We'll ask him about that in a second. Thank you for making time for us, Joe. Have you given any thought at all? Because you are an unusual creature. I believe on draft day, everyone knew you were going high, and you were like, I don't want to do any of the pomp and circumstance. Have you given any thought to your Hall of Fame speech or your Hall of Fame time that is surely upcoming?
I have not. I think that's one of those things where you're going to figure it out when you get there. You don't want to, you know, count your chickens a little too soon right now. We still got a few years.
Outside of the camaraderie, what do you miss about football?
The paycheck, right? I mean, it's hanging out with your buddies in the locker room, on the football field, in the meeting rooms. And then it's pretty good when you get that paycheck every couple of weeks.
Can you tell us about the first few times that you sort of checked the direct deposit, or the couple of times where you were like, wow, this is
really, it has to be the best feeling.
This is really, really nice here.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you go for playing for training table and snacks when you're in college, and all of a sudden you get that signing bonus being a first round pick, and you're like, man, this is real. And then you go back and you log into your online account and you're like, wow, I really do have some money now. This is kind of cool. Maybe I can do this for a few more years and have even more of this. This is a good feeling.
Did any problems come with money that you weren't expecting?
I don't know. You know what? My dad was a banker. And so growing up, like, that was something that we talked about in the house, budgeting, managing money. And so I feel like I was pretty well prepared for the money that comes along with being a first round pick and, you know, the issues that you have to deal with sometimes. So I felt like I wasn't surprised by any of those.
What was your financial philosophy? Were you like Gronk? Gronk, I think, lived off of his endorsement money and wouldn't touch the football money.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you know, but Gronk is like a good-looking celebrity that plays a position that catches the ball, and I'm an offensive lineman, so I'd be eating peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and drinking whole milk for every meal if I tried to live on my offensive lineman endorsement money. But I think the big thing for me was just kind of living modestly. Like, you can obviously treat yourself to some nice stuff when you go from being a college kid to the NFL, but don't try to spend a bunch of money and end up with no assets. If you're going to make a big purchase, make sure it's an appreciating asset, not a depreciating asset. So don't go buy stupid cars and stupid boats.
What's the nicest thing you own, Jeff?
Outside of like a car or a house?
Just
or
the nicest. Like,
what are the confines?
The nicest thing that you own, the thing that you would show off first if someone asks, what's the nicest thing Joe Thomas has?
I can't even think of anything nice, but I have lots of nice stuff. I've got a pontoon boat that is really killer for the kids in the summer. Wow. We can tube behind it. It's fast enough. We can pull somebody on water skis. That is a really nice thing.
You had mentioned to us before that you were very eager to lose weight in retirement, and one of the things that you had to do to keep on weight was drink two big glasses of whole milk and a sleeve of thin mint Girl Scout cookies right before bed just to make sure you got the calories. What do you identify as the most disgusting thing that you had to do, or remembering back on where you had to do something to keep weight on?
I think it's just the idea of, like, every day is your Thanksgiving meal where – you know, everybody likes that Thanksgiving meal until it's over, and then they just feel horrible. And it's kind of like, I'm never going to drink again. Like, I'm never going to eat again. But when you're playing in the NFL and you're a guy that is underweight, that needs to gain weight, like, you have to have that feeling after every meal. And so it just becomes a little bit uncomfortable with the amount of sugar that you have to eat. Like I said, the Thin Mint cookies over and over again. Sounds good once, but when you're doing it every night for like 11 years, it gets to be a stomach ache.
So what is the thing you miss least then? Is it that? Is it the pain? Because you played every snap. I don't know how close you were to ever missing a snap, but what do you miss least?
Yeah, for sure the pain. Like, we used to have a joke in the offensive line room that the best you'll ever feel is that first day of training camp. Because once you start training camp, you know, middle of July, your body feels like absolute crap, like you were in a car accident every single day until the season's over. And honestly, that starts weighing on you mentally because you just feel horrible every day when you wake up. You feel like crap and it sucks. You know, it's like my grandma would always say, like, don't ever get old. It sucks. You feel terrible. Like, that's what being an offensive lineman in the NFL feels like.
When would it stop? How long into the offseason could you have a fresh body?
Yeah, it always took a little bit longer every year you were in, right? Because as you get older, you just recover slower. But, you know, typically on average, it was 2 to 3 weeks, and then you were feeling pretty good. And I think that's why you see so many guys, right? The report is, oh, this is their last season in the NFL, and then, you know, they're going to retire. And then all of a sudden, a month and a half into the offseason, they're feeling pretty good. They miss being around the guys. They miss those paychecks. And then they, what do? They stick it out. Oh, one more year.
And that part of it, can you, you said car crash, but is there a way for us, when you say the mental toll, I've got to imagine that mood and depression, that some of those, if you're constantly lugging around pain, Joe, I would imagine that the mental toll is a lot bigger than we could possibly understand.
Yeah, it certainly affects your mood, right? You think about like those old people that are old and they're, you know, kind of decrepit a little bit. And they're just always grumpy, right? Because they feel like crap all the time. It's hard to be positive and have a fun outlook and be fun to be around when you just feel like crap. So it affects your mood. It affects, obviously, like your depression a little bit. But I will say, when you try to make a fist with your hands because of the swelling in your fingers, like you can't make a fist because your fingers get so swollen. And I used to have to wear a different wedding ring in season than I did out of season because of how swollen my fingers would get.
We don't know you, but you seem super affable. So I can't really imagine sort of a not affable Joe Thomas.
Ask my wife after a game how affable I was. She might use a different F word. I know that doesn't start with an F, but if it had F in the beginning, that's what she would call me.
So what would she tell us? What would she tell us about Joe? Did she know to stay away?
Yeah, that's exactly right. She knew that. A, when I came home from practice, don't talk about football because I don't want to talk about it. And when I came home from a game, just don't talk to me. Just leave me alone because it's not going to be a good conversation for either one of us. And we're definitely going to regret it the next day.
Have you found anything in retirement that fills the football hole, the competitive Sunday arena gladiator hole?
I mean, I did Titan games, which was kind of fun. And it actually was almost a bad thing because it gave me a little taste of the competition that I missed and it made me want more. But I like to work out. I've got a group of buddies that like we work out pretty hard and that's been kind of fun. But I think you couple that with some of the media work that I've done where you're covering games and you're talking about the games. And I think that's given me enough of that football taste in my mouth where I don't really miss it. And especially that we talked about how the pain sort of added up and like weighed on your mood. That's still fresh in my mind. Like I have not forgotten that. And I think when I forget that, then I'll really miss football, but I still remember how it made me feel. And so it's easy for me to roll out of bed on Sunday and crack a beer and watch somebody else go to work.
What are some of the other curiosities that you've had opened up for you with free time? Any interesting hobbies?
Well, I was always a gardener, but my gardening has gotten like much bigger and I've gotten into canning hot peppers and making Giardini. It's really fun, like having the time to be able to waste it, right? Like being able to garden and make stuff that I can easily just go to the store and buy if I wanted to, but you have the time to kind of do it from scratch, which has been very enjoyable.
You would do that shirtless, right?
Of course, yeah, if you asked for it. Right.
Joe, is there anything more exciting than when you get a good rainstorm?
Oh, the rain.
Oh, man, the lawn just feeds off of that. There's no, you can have your irrigation system, your time sprinklers and all that, but there is no suitable replacement for Mother Earth doing her thing.
I don't understand what the difference is, though, but there is a difference. You know, when you get a nice, good rain, you get a steady, like, all-day half-incher, that lawn just responds unbelievably. And if you just sprinkled it for the same amount of time, you wouldn't have that same growth. You wouldn't have that same thickness, that greenness, that softness that you get when you get a great rain from Mother Nature.
Oh, I'm sure your lawn is looking lush. You ever secure the perimeter? Do you take a lap around and admire your work?
All the time, man. That's like the daily routine. Get out, get some exercise, take a lap.
Beautiful. Give us some gardening tips with Joe Thomas. I'd like a new segment. Like, just give us a handful of things that we don't know about how to keep a lawn lush.
Epsom salt. If you put Epsom salt on your peppers, there's some of the minerals in there really helps with the flowering and the fruiting. And so you can really do some good gardening there if you add a little bit of Epsom salt at the right time.
Kyle Shanahan was an offensive coordinator for you guys in 2014. Do you have evidence that he's smarter than everyone else?
Yes, because he coached me and he was my favorite offensive coordinator by far. And it was easy to see. He was the first offensive coordinator that I ever had that coached every position in the room. Most offensive coordinators, they're like, hey, I came from a quarterback background, so I'm going to coach the quarterback and the receivers. And when there's an offensive line problem, I'll look to the offensive line coach and then he can figure it out for me, right? they delegate that role. But Kyle didn't delegate. He coached every single position because he knew exactly what he wanted from all those guys.
But Joe, you knew he was going to eventually be this, what he is today?
I felt like it, because even before I had him, I knew guys that worked with him in Washington, and then when he was with the Texans, and they said, this is the smartest offensive coordinator I've ever been around. You're going to love him. He's the first coordinator that doesn't coddle receivers. He doesn't coddle quarterbacks. He actually holds them accountable to block. He'll yell at them if they don't do the right stuff. He's like, he's an offensive lineman's dream, and it was true.
I don't know if you follow guys coming in the draft, offensive linemen, but have you seen this Ben Cleveland that the Ravens drafted? 6'6", 350 pounds, all of it seemingly muscle.
I'm jealous. I mean, he wasn't one of the top guys in the draft, but anytime you have a specimen that looks like that, there's going to be lots of NFL coaches that are just drooling to be able to get their hands on a guy like this and put him into NFL techniques and practices and drills and a training table and a weight room. And, you know, that's why you get guys that, like the Mike Mamulas, right, who look amazing, and offensive line coaches or defensive line coaches in his case, they couldn't help themselves. They didn't care what his football looked like. They just could not wait to get him under their coaching, which every NFL coach thinks they're better than the college coaches. So they think that they can maximize everybody's potential. But it'll be interesting to see. I mean, the guy looks like an absolute stud.
Give me three guys that Joe Thomas lined up against, because you were a monster. Three guys you lined up against, and just physically, as you stood in front of them, you were like, God damn, holy shit, this dude.
Haloti Ngata was like one of those guys, because he was terrifying. Mm-hmm. He was like, what, 360 or something like that, but he could run like a deer. I mean, he was making tackles sideline to sideline in his prime, like he was Ray Lewis. And that's... In my opinion, when they were at their best, at least when I was playing against the Ravens, it was because of Haloti Ngata more than any other guys on that field. So he's one guy that stands out right away when I think about that. And then Sean Rogers, he never tapped into his potential because he had a little bit of a lethargy issue. He's not exactly the hardest worker, but the times where he would go, because he was another guy, 360, runs like 4.7, 4.8, can dunk a shot put, like, he is a physical freak that when he would go, nobody could get in his way. I mean, Alex Mack was a young player when we drafted him, and we had Sean Rogers at the nose guard. But Sean would pick up Alex Mack, who I think is going to be a Hall of Famer as a center, and he would just discard him like he was a used suit. He would throw him from one hash to the other hash in one-on-one pass rush moves like I'd never seen anybody do to another professional athlete in my entire life.
You just pissed off Ray Lewis and Ed Reed.
That's okay. I'm bigger than those guys. So. not bigger than Haloti.
Did not ever say anything to you? Was he much of a talker?
He wasn't a big talker. He didn't have to, because he was humiliating people. Like, I think you can talk if it's a close battle, but if you're just humiliating people, you're just sitting on resting on your laurels and what you've the wreckage that you've done on the field.
Go ahead, Stugatz. What did Haloti say to Joe Thomas?
So he said Ngata.
You couldn't just say the Ngata. Vanilla Volcano. How did you get the nickname?
So Mike Silver gave it to me. It was my great dancing skills. I'm not sure if that was sarcastic or not, but at one of the Super Bowl parties that we were in when I was a wee lad in Cleveland.
I'm pretty sure it was sarcastic, unless you fancy yourself.
I left the window open that it wasn't sarcastic, but I think we all know the answer.
When Louis Riddick describes an offensive lineman as having typewriters for feet, is that a compliment or not a compliment?
I'm not really sure what that means, because honestly, as an offensive lineman, like, you need your feet in the ground to be able to move people. And like, if your feet are bouncing like typewriters, that means you're just like hopping like a rabbit, and you're not actually putting your feet in the ground and creating force. So I like that you have quick feet, but in the end, you got to be able to put them in the ground and create force, and it really doesn't matter how quickly they pop up and down.
Reportedly, Tim Tebow is going to possibly become a tight end for the Jags. What would you have been as a tight end? Would you have been any good as a tight end?
Certainly a better blocker than Tim Tebow is going to be. I know that.
Okay, so Tim Tebow, can you imagine Tim Tebow as a tight end?
I'm sure he's probably got good hands, because most quarterbacks have really good hand-eye coordination and they're really good at catching. But the question is he going to be enough of an athlete to sort of split him out, or is he going to be strong and physical enough as a guy who doesn't really have a blocking background, to be able to put him in line and get him in some of those, those, you know, 21 runs where you're actually putting him at the point of attack. I don't know. I mean, it's worth trying, especially because he seems to be a really hard worker and a guy that's a good locker room guy. And so if he's your third tight end or fourth tight end, like, those are always guys that you want playing special teams. You want all around the other guys, showing them how to be professional. But is he going to be a great success? I'm not sure I would bet on that.
Joe, as you know, Mike Ryan, our executive producer, is a big Browns fan. And I was talking to him right before you came on, asking him about Aaron Rodgers, because I think if a trade is made, they will not trade him inside the NFC. It will be to the AFC. And within the AFC, there are only a handful of teams that have enough equity to go up and get someone like Aaron Rodgers. The Browns are one of those teams. And I think if you want to beat Patrick Mahomes, you're not going to do it with Baker Mayfield. You have to do it with a guy like Aaron Rodgers. So with all that said, if you're the Browns, if you're running the Browns, would you make a run at Aaron Rodgers?
I don't think you want to, because one, you've got a young quarterback in Baker Mayfield who's proven that he's a really good player, and he's got a huge future ahead of him. I mean, 10, 15 years, hopefully Baker can be the quarterback in Cleveland. Aaron's probably going to play maybe 2 to 5 years. I don't know, somewhere in there. I mean, he's 37 years old as we speak today, going to be 38 next season. And what you also don't want to do is dismantle your team that you've built, which the Browns have built a really good team. You look at the Browns offense, they only drafted, you know, one guy who might play this year, and that's Schwartz. And he's more of going to be like a gadget jet sweep guy, because everybody else they have on offense is really good. So you don't want to dismantle what you've put together for a long-term success to try to bring on Aaron Rodgers and hope that you can win a Super Bowl in the next year or two, when you've got a legit chance with Baker Mayfield of making a run at 10 or 15 years where you're relevant and have a chance to win Super Bowls over that period.
How much does it piss you off that the Browns are good now?
It's great. Like I said, I love rolling out of bed on a Sunday, cracking a beer and turning on the Browns and being happy. Like, that didn't get to happen when I was there. Would I have loved to be really good when I was on the Browns? Absolutely. But I hold no spite whatsoever being able to be a fan and seeing the resurgence of that team right now.
Joe Thomas will stop and gaze at himself now in a mirror, right? Whether he's emerging from the bathroom or the swimming pool, you will gaze at what your body has become now, correct?
Only from like a self-hate, like criticism, motivation standpoint. Like, oh, look at yourself, you fat slob. You need to get your ass back in the pool.
Now?
Got to do that, right? It's like the body dysmorphia that you have as a professional athlete that like continues to drive yourself.
But Joe, you look great now.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
I'm surprised you don't think that though.
Well, you can't like let yourself think that, right? Because then you lose your motivation to like continue working out and like feeling good and good things that go with it, right? Yeah. If you're just like, yeah, I'm good, then you stop working out and you stop trying to eat the right way and stop trying to feel good.
Are you totally disgusted when you look back at how bloated you had to be when you were eating Girl Scout cookies before bed?
No, you know what? I don't really think about it, obviously, because as an lineman, like, there's a very few number of offensive linemen who probably think of themselves as like dead sexy, you know, because part of the job is being big and sloppy.
Who's an offensive lineman that you believe looks at himself and sees dead sexy?
That's a good question. Yes. Probably people that are very demented in the head. Alex Mack definitely thinks he's dead sexy.
Joe, always good.
And I can say that because he's a good friend.
I understand, Munoz, Joe. We don't need you offering the diluting qualifier that Hall of Famer Alex Mack is crazy and looks at himself because he's also vain. Good talking to you, Joe. Always good talking to you. Thank you for making the time, sir.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We're going to do funniest thing from the sports weekend in a second, but I wanted to ask a question that we did not have time to get to last week, which was Adam Schefter went on Dan Patrick's show and basically said that he held the Aaron Rodgers news till draft day for maximum impact, which surprised me on a couple of different fronts. I would think that in the news breaking business, you would worry about somebody else getting that story, but he is super confident in his sources and information. And that story has not been denied by anybody. So the story seems to be true, but he waited and was getting a lot of criticism for maximizing the television audience and the story by doing it on draft day. Did you have any thoughts, Stugatz? And keep in mind, we've talked about this for a while. ESPN chose to get into the journalism business. They did not have to get into the journalism business. And more with cost cutting and a move toward just sports rights and the stuff that ESPN is doing, they are scaling back on the journalism that they do. But some people had some objections to journalism done that way for maximum splash. Your thoughts are what there, guys?
I would want max splash. I understand why people are upset, okay? You want the news when he has the news. It's his job to give you that news when he has the news. But he also wanted max splash, so you're asking the wrong guy here. Because if I had that kind of news and that kind of information and those kind of contacts, and I knew there was a 0% chance of anyone else getting the news that I had, I would absolutely wait for max exposure. I would.
Well, the news guys tend to be pretty skittish on that stuff. I've told you before that I do not envy the way that these people live. Woj, Shams, I don't know if you saw Stugatz, but Shams is now reporting that J. Cole starts playing basketball this weekend in Africa. He's playing in an African league, and he is going up against Nigeria on Sunday, and the news hounds in this business, they tend to be pretty paranoid. They can't relax, sleep with one eye open. It is not for me. I told you before, when I was at the Miami Herald competing on the Marlins beat in 1993, I was crying in the Herald bathroom at midnight because I was overwhelmed and did not like doing it. It was not fun for me to cover sports that way in the news breaking business.
But do you realize the confidence that Schefter must have in the fact that no one else was getting that story? Otherwise, he'd give it to you.
I can't believe that he had that confidence on that story.
But one of the principal tenets of journalism is that the journalist should not be the story. And now Adam Schefter is the story, not Aaron Rodgers. So it is a pretty big faux pas if you do consider journalism to be something that should be, you know, there's unwritten rules or whatever you want to call them.
I think it's easy for us to sit here and judge and say all that unless we had the information and knew no one else was getting it. I mean, he knew nobody else was getting it, so... And he went for the splash, and I'm okay with that.
How can you possibly know that, though, Stugatz? How can you?
Otherwise, he gives it out.
But Stugatz,
Dan,
how can you possibly know?
Because can you imagine if he had that story?
Stugatz, how can anyone possibly know that they're the only one that has a story?
I feel like Schefter knows. I mean, he might be the only one because he's Schefter.
But Dan, when you're reporting on something, don't you rely on the person giving you the story to kind of when you release it? Like, are we believing Schefter here fully? Like, couldn't he have gotten this story and they were kind of like, hey, you should release it this time? And he's now just kind of like, hey, I release it when I want. When really he might have been told when to release it.
And it also sounds like he clearly knew all of this information some period of time ahead of the draft. So why not a week earlier or 2 weeks earlier? Like, he obviously held on to it for ratings purposes. And I think that if you're someone who cares about journalism, that is in itself like the problematic piece of the puzzle here.
I don't know how many people care that much about journalism, given the stuff that we have seen happen over the last 4 years and the particular orange racist turd buffoon who was able, with just two words, to take out the credibility of much of journalism because of how much anger and hostility people have toward journalists in general. I would say, though, as it regards television journalism, Adam Schefter came from writing journalism. That is the most highfalutin and the ethical, the most ethical of the journalism. So I don't know how and when the sports fan cares about journalism, except when wait a minute, what do you mean you denied me this information I could have had earlier and you waited until maximum splash of draft day to reveal a story that had a bunch of different sources? It wasn't coming from any one source, according to him.
I think fans get upset if it affects their team and maybe what they would do. I'm certain there are some who want the information when he has the information because they think, hey, that's your job. You get the story, you get the information, give it to me. I wonder if teams are upset about it, because if that information is released a week before the draft, perhaps teams do more, and maybe Aaron, perhaps teams do more to try to trade with the Packers to go get Aaron Rodgers before the draft.
Let's go ahead and do funniest thing from the sports weekend.
Hey, people, tell us what in the sport made you laugh hardest this weekend. It is a segment we call What Made You Laugh This Weekend. Ha, ha, ha.
Roy, what was the funniest thing from the sports weekend?
Jake Paul taking Floyd Mayweather's cap and saying, I got your hat, during one of the press conferences for the fight.
That was really stupid. It was a stupid thing that was, look at Billy. Look, Billy, are you made happy by this? I was surprised that you guys didn't spread out this weekend. Canelo Alvarez saying that he would like to fight the Pauls one by one on the same night.
I think the dumber part about it was that he decided to remember this forever by getting a got your hat tattoo that night on his leg.
It is so dumb. Like these Pauls.
But it works. That's the worst part, is that it works.
It does. They know how to create a buzz around what it is that they're doing. And they he just walked up to Floyd Mayweather, tiny, tiny Floyd Mayweather, and got in his face, and instead of doing anything in terms of physical confrontation, he took his cap and ran away.
That happens in sixth grade.
What was the funniest thing from the sports weekend, Whittingham?
Sergio Aguero taking a penalty for Manchester City, going for a Panenka right down the middle, allowed the time for the goalkeeper not only to go to ground, but get back up and catch it, and allowed Chelsea to come back and beat Man City by 2-1.
I mean, did you have to have the British accent on that?
It's not British. It's Argentinian if we want to parse words.
Right. Well, if you want to say so, yeah.
Right. But secondly, I could have really gone for a French accent because the name of the Chelsea keeper is Edouard Mondi, if you want me to say it like that.
Roy, we heard nothing British in there. We heard nothing.
Roy, where did you hear British in there?
At the very beginning, I heard British. And then it just went away.
I pronounced his name Sergio Aguero. They say it over there like Sergio Aguero, which is like the least Hispanic way you can say that.
Cody, we have to find some sound to play as Whittingham continues to lean into correcting people with pronunciations, because I love that he's agitating everybody with it. Billy, what was the funniest thing from the sports weekend?
I think that it was Lindor and Jeff McNeil arguing if something was a raccoon or a rat.
Man.
They were lying. Cody, what about you?
The Angels' Luis Rojas swiping up, trying to tag Mookie Betts and just cup check him.
I was curious about that because he was genuinely sorry that he had done that. And Mookie Betts fell off of the base, didn't call timeout, and was someone who could have been tagged out at that point. But Rojas seemed to think to himself, you know what? It's wrong for me to tag him here after I've just hit him in the junk. I'm going to not tag him. Is that what happened in that situation?
He did seem to give the stereotypical reach out of, ooh, my bad, that move.
Jessica, what was the funniest thing from the sports weekend?
It was when Jimbo Fisher said last week that he was going to beat Nick Saban's ass this year. And then Nick Saban replied and said, in golf, because Jimbo Fisher is not losing to Nick Saban anytime soon.
Nick Saban's not losing to Jimbo Fisher anytime soon.
Yes, exactly. We also need more shit-talking college football coaches in sports.
Sue Guts.
We are in a place, though, where that passes for shit talking when in like a golf joke.
Right.
That's what's, where we're at. What's right? He going to be? That's hey, old golf, man humor.
Saban and Jimbo.
How dare he say that? What's he going to beat me at? Golf?
College football has no personalities in its head coaches that are not problematic. So this is what we need. This is what we need. Banter.
What about you, Stugatz? What was the funniest thing from the sports weekend?
After testing positive for steroids, Donald Trump called Bob Baffert's horse a junkie.
Well, I mean, you made it sound from the way that you phrased that like Donald Trump had tested positive for steroids. I wasn't clear in that statement whether Donald Trump knew that the Kentucky Derby, that it was a horse. Like, were you guys clear on that? Were you guys absolutely positive that, I mean, a horse can't really be a junkie, can it? Put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Levitard Show. Can a horse be a junkie?
Bob Baffert has since blamed the positive test on cancel culture.
Bob Baffert, who has 30 plus failed drug tests for his horses in 40 years in racing. That's basically one a year. You can't really have that many failed tests and not be a cheater, correct? That many, Stugatz, in four decades?
He's a cheater.
Thank you, Stugatz.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.